Hi, Internet. My name is Jonathan Matos.
And this is Melissa Matos.
Welcome to Unboxing Story, where we unpack our feels about fringe fiction.
And where we may never sleep again.
that's a good way to get into our experience with horror. because Melissa was actually saying that, what was it that, like, it, the fantasy, like, there's kind of a distinction in my mind, too, that there's kind of fantasy horror.
Yeah.
And then there's just, like, somebody that's going around torturing and/or killing people. And sometimes, going into it, what this kind of stemmed from was, I was saying, like, this is kind of, like, I could tell it would be an homage to 80s horror in some way. And what's different about 80s horror compared to, like, some of the weird avant-garde stuff in the 70s was that a lot of that was just building tension. And then, like, there's a ghost and their head is missing. It's like real weird,
yeah,
you know, giallo-inspired stuff. But in the 80s, it was, like, a slasher movies, and there would be a kill and then some jokes and then a kill and then some jokes. And it wasn't – they relieved some of the tension as it went on. So that's what I kind of expected, because people were saying, like, you know, it's kind of funny. There are funny parts to it. And I feel like they exaggerated a little bit. Like, the horror
There were occasional funny parts, mm-hmm. but
– But, yeah, I expected it to be more like a wink, like, thing. Like I thought that the father character was going to be much more like Jordan Peele is. And I feel like, or like in Get Out, the security guard character was really hamming it up. Like,
yeah,
they wanted you to, like, you know, laugh.
But there was no hamming up in this. Like, usually in comedy horrors, they will play off of the gore being overdone
mm-hmm.
to get laughs. And that wasn't the case here either.
Right.
It was very deeply psychologically disturbing mm-hmm. and I'm going to have to stay up and watch cartoons now because I cannot breathe well enough to go to sleep.
Well, that's one of the things is that usually if something like this, I can tell that it's doing something deeper. I'm more like, it's kind of like when you're watching a comedy and you can tell that it's funny, but you don't laugh. It's a weird thing where you're just like, oh, that was funny. And then there are some people that are even like that, that they don't really laugh at comedies anyway.
I like smirk things that make you smirk.
Right. So to me, this was like a horror movie that I appreciated so much the craft of the movie that I was just sitting there like, oh, that's neat. And I mean, obviously, like, one thing I'll do is I'll put my fingers in my ears because I know half of it is like music stingers. Mm-hmm. So that, like, viscerally, I just have to do that in order to deal with it. And it was, I genuinely thought it was, Us was creepy, but, one of those things I think that we can talk about is that we're both real big fans of Key and Peele.
Yes.
And, your favorite skin
is still the vampire one.
I'll just wear what I got bit in.
I love that line so much. There's so many good lines in that. It's like, did any of that get in your mouth? His name ain't even Tristan.
Yeah.
Like, it's just hilarious. You need to look it up on YouTube now. Yeah. Look up Key and Peele Vampire.
And that's a good example of that 80s, like, what's it called? The Lost Boys.
Right.
It's a good example of a horror comedy. It's not really super scary, like, psychological horror. Like, it's not going to get under your skin as much unless you're, like, you can't watch anything remotely. There are those people that just, like, oh, it's got vampires, I'm out. But that's just kind of, like, these teenagers that are kind of sexy and, like, you know, the whole thing is supposed to be that there's this kid that's, like, you know, he's trying to prove himself and become part of this, like, vampire fraternity type thing. And so it's more of, like, a teenage drama that happens to have vampires in it.
Yeah.
We're both Jordan Peele fans, and so, like, I expected there to be some, like, gut-busting laughs from it and have it be maybe a little bit more, because a lot of people were stressing the humor in it. But another thing I saw from the trailers, and we're going to talk a little bit about our expectations and our general thoughts about the movie, and then for the second part of this, we'll go we'll get into spoilers. And because there's a lot of twists and stuff, and I think we both want to talk about what the hidden meanings and all the what he's trying to get at with it. But first off, when I was looking at the trailers, I was thinking, okay, it's us. That could also be U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about the whole the dual personality thing, and it, like, the metaphor of this is like the worst part of you. What if like the worst part of you was coming after you? And it, like, watching it, I had this expectation that the family was going to have all of these deep-seated issues that they weren't talking about, that
right.
they were, like,
and that,
keeping
that, that
secret.
Was going to blow up in their faces, kind of, and that was what it was representing, and that they would have to have some,
mm-hmm.
each of them would have something that they had to overcome or prove to, you know, defeat the copy of themselves.
Right, and so one of those things within movies is that, like, we have a whole episode about this. It's called, well, I was going to say Schrodinger's Gun. That's not the right thing.
No.
It's Chekhov's Space Gun, I think.
Chekhov's Space Gun.
Yeah, where we talk all about Chekhov's gun. And when you set up something, his whole thing was, if you have a gun on the mantle in the first act, by the third act, it has to go off. So I expected there to be these very, like, kind of ham-fisted things where it's like, you know, this person is good at swimming. Guess how they're going to escape the bad guy?
Right.
They're going to swim away. but that was completely subverted. And my general thesis for this episode, my kind of angle going into this is, there's this expression that has been murdered by millennials nowadays that's called being woke.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, this is actually one of those slang terms that I think had a meaning before it was torn to shreds
okay.
by humanity. And I think one of those things is, especially because I've heard it in a lot of, like, R&B and hip-hop songs, and let me get out of the way the fact that I know I don't know what this actually means. I'm just going to say what I think it means based on hearing it. And it's this idea that as a Black American, you have to pay attention to how things are. And there's this idea of, like, there's this America that's a facade,
mm-hmm.
and then there's what's really going on. So for a Black American, that's racism.
Right.
Like, somebody might treat you one way in public, or in private, rather, but then in public they'll treat you a different way, and then there's that harsh reality of, like, oh, because of the color of my skin, this is how I'm going to get treated now by this or that person. So I was thinking going into this that there might be that idea of, you need to pay attention to how things really are. But I wasn't sure going into it what that reality was going to be.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And I knew, based on what I'd heard about the movie, that it wasn't going to just be about race. Like, he had made it very clear, Jordan Peele made it very clear, that, you know, Get Out was about race, but this wasn't only going to be a problem between white and Black Americans and things like that. So we'll go into more of what we think that is in broader detail. But when you saw the trailers, was there anything specific that you saw or caught that you thought was going to happen?
I mean, I don't know that I had anything huge expectation. I was expecting it to be more focused on the home invasion kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Because they showed it, they only showed the copy of the family and them and the family, like, kind of getting into the house,
mm-hmm.
and stuff. I was fully expecting there to be hurt rabbits.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But there were no hurt rabbits.
Yeah, because they show rabbits in the trailer.
Yeah.
And that's a big horror trope that,
would,
like,
yeah.
somebody's going to hurt the little
innocent,
bunnies.
Right, to show how terrifying they are.
Right.
No rabbits, as far as I know, were harmed in the making
yeah.
of this film. And I think I was expecting it, I don't think I was expecting it to reach as broadly as it did.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right,
I was,
so not to give it away, but as the, you were saying, the home invasion is what's shown in the trailers.
Right. And so you're thinking it's much more personal, much more individual, you know, like a and more typical for, like, just creepy things happening to you and your family, and you have to defend your family. Mm-hmm. But it went further than that, and I think that's part of what has me all shaken up.
Cool. So yeah, so my general thoughts were that, like you said, what starts out as a home invasion movie, and this general thing that it sets up between, like you start to get to know the family, and they're very, it's a very naturalistic dialogue. Like it seems like a real family.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that really ingratiated me to the movie. And it's something that, not many people get right in horror movies nowadays, where it's like, if you're going to care about whether these people survive, it'd be nice if you liked them a little.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you actually gave a crap about these
because
people.
Because I was making that joke. We were watching Warehouse 13 the other day, which we're going to talk about in the sci-fi episode.
Woo.
Coming up soon. Also a Jordan Peele episode because he's reviving
Twilight Zone.
Get ready
so
for that.
So excited, man, because yeah. If this is the level of stuff you're delivering, Twilight Zone is going to rock.
Yeah, he's reviving that on CBS All Access. So if you want to be a part of that episode, you want to talk about it online at A Moxing Story, you're going to have to put out some change.
It's $5 a month, I think.
Yeah, for CBS All Access.
Is he dropping it all at once, or is he going to drop them?
I have a feeling that it would, because how was Star Trek?
That wasn't all at the same time either. It was
all spread. Yeah, so I'm assuming it'll be once a week. Excuse me. But we're going to talk about Twilight Zone and small screen sci-fi. And one of the shows that we're watching pretty regularly that was on in the, 2010s was Warehouse 13. One of the episodes, they're in Egypt, and it's just these, douchey guys that are like, oh, dude, I'm going to make it with that Egyptian chick over there. Ha! And then they all start dying. And it's just like, oh, it's like watching a Hostel movie. Because all of those movies, Hostel and I think Saw to a degree, they're all kind of like, these are all horrible people. Let's watch them die in succession. And what makes that dramatically unsatisfying to me is that
I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. Why should I care if all these douchey people die? It's just punishment. Like, there's no dramatic. And I think maybe there's some blank canvas character that maybe you can project yourself onto. I know in the Hostel series, it's just kind of like a dude that's like, he just keeps going like, I don't know about that. He's just dorky. There's nothing redeeming about him. He's still these people's friend. And you're like, why are you these people's
friends?
Why are
you hanging out with these people? I don't understand.
But that's what I liked about this family was that they're just these, just normal family. And like I was saying, I was expected there to be very cartoonish things about them, like the being good at swimming and that there would be these things that would be like, oh, I'm keeping this real dark secret, because they mentioned the drugs thing. With the song.
Oh, right.
And I was like, is the dad going to be addicted to drugs or a former drug dealer or something? And so that would have been disappointing because it was like, I want to root for the people fighting the bad guy. And so it was very much that type of thing. Like they were just, and especially Lupita Nyong'o from the trailer, you don't really think that she's going to be the lead character. It seems like more of an ensemble thing. But it's very much her acting is...
She's amazing. She is so amazing.
Yeah. And you really... You attach yourself to that character. It shows you a little bit of her childhood.
I also want to know who they got to play the young her. Because that kid... all her acting... She didn't even talk, does she?
Not very much, no.
I don't think she says anything. All her acting is her face. And she is really, really good.
Mm. Yeah. So I like the family and the scares initially, and especially because some of the beats going on with the house.
Mm-hmm.
I was still interested the whole time. It wasn't boring me or anything, but I wasn't necessarily like on the edge of my
seat.
Yeah,
not at the beginning.
During the different exposition thing. I was in the flashback at the beginning because I'm just like, because you haven't seen any of that stuff. I'm just like, I don't know what's going to happen. And the reviews that I watched, I appreciate that they weren't spoilery at all. So I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, I didn't know
and they were even saying, like, when you watch it, you don't know who this family is, if it's connected to the thing. It's pretty obvious after that what it is, how they, based on the editing. But that, the beginning part wasn't, but then there's a part where I told Melissa, I said, I swore out loud for the first time in a movie.
Yeah.
Because there's just this surprise.
Total change of situation.
Right. And then from that point on, it ramps up to this thing where
quite quickly.
And like I said, there are breaks in the tension, so it's not necessarily to me it wasn't overwhelming to watch. But at the same time, like, I was very tense and it was keeping me on the edge of my seat after that point. So after the break, we're gonna talk our spoilers and what our thoughts were about the different metaphors and all those types of things. We'll see you after the break.
Mid-roll.
Dang it. Welcome back. So it escalates when they stave off the family from their home.
Invading their home, yes.
Yeah. I thought it was cool how they kind of introduced different elements in there with the, like, the brother. He
gets the other brother to mimic him. Mm-hmm. The shadow of himself. They set up a lot of good stuff in the first section.
But like, when he takes off the bed and shows them burns, and then he traps him in the closet. I thought that was a cool sequence. But other than that, I was just kind of like, okay, so like, I get what they're doing. And, you know, when she sits her down, that was a really well done scene because, like, they, Lupita Nyong'o's copy kind of explains something.
Mm-hmm.
When she sits down, and like from the trailer, you see them mirror each other in the living room. But what was interesting to me was that it was bonkers insane what she was saying.
Yes.
And nobody laughed.
No.
The way that the scene was done, I was just like, oh, okay, people are buying this, even though, like, you can't, like, she mentions rabbits and, like, there was a shadow, and the shadow...
Yeah, like, it doesn't come across very coherent.
Yeah, it was kind of like a little bit word salad-y. And then they you know, fight them off, and they get out in the boat that also is shown in the trailer.
So they set up some of the story there about the whole, there are shadow people.
Mm.
They set up the brother and the other boy connection.
Uh-huh.
They set up that she is the only one that can speak.
Mm.
The rest of them are all either, they can make sounds, but they don't talk.
Right.
And some of them don't make any sounds at all, which you don't see in the first section, but you eventually realize that is part of it as well.
Right. And another thing I'll give it credit for was that I thought it was going to set up more that the boy... The real boy was going to be like a pyromaniac, mm-hmm. or like that there would be hints that he had maybe therapy or something like that. But they leave a lot of things very subtle and open to interpretation.
Yeah.
Which I thought was nice. Like it didn't need to make it so that, like, somehow his psychosis makes him, like, more powerful or something like that.
Because
they could have gone this route where it's like, him unleashing his dark side is what makes him able to fight the bad guys.
Right.
Rather, what they do is they start, like Melissa was saying, catching on to the fact that, oh, they're going to copy us. So the dad hits his own head, on the side of the boat, and it makes it so that the dad, his mirror, his shadow, like, gets incapacitated and is, like, floundering in the water and everything. And likewise, the son, like, they're in this car, in the car, they get out, and the son looks like he's about to light this line of gasoline on fire that's going to blow up their car, but he starts walking backwards, and so his shadow starts walking backwards, and there's already a burning car, and so the shadow version of him starts catching fire. So that was really interesting. And the big thing that made me, like, oh crap, but not that, was that the white friends that you see in the trailer also have copies of them.
Yes.
And not only are they copies, but this is kind of like a zombie outbreak of sorts.
Yes.
For whatever reason, everyone has a shadow like this. And
they are all now free and coming mm-hmm. after you.
And what it set up in the beginning was that Lupita Nyong'o had this shadow person that she met, and you're not really sure what happened between them,
right.
but she is aware.
She was severely traumatized by this whole thing. Didn't even want to come back to this beach. None of that. She was like, right. I don't want to be here. She's coming after me. We should go.
Mm-hmm. What ends up happening with the shadow people, Lupita Nyong'o's shadow says that there were clones that were created in this underground facility.
Right.
That's another thing that's set up at the beginning, in the beginning crawl. This has like a Star Wars-esque.
Yeah. There's
not that dramatic.
Text at the beginning saying how there's all these underground tunnels in the United States. Some of them are subways. Mm-hmm. Some of them are abandoned mines. Most of them, nobody has an idea why they're there.
Right. And
except for apparently whoever had the bunnies.
Right. Right. So, and that's another motif that's shown throughout the movie. And the idea was that somebody had perfected cloning, although when you clone someone, they don't have a soul. And
or
so
they share a soul is what
oh,
it sounded
right.
like.
Okay. So yeah. So they share a soul. And so you're tethered to this copy of you
right.
that was created.
And then they were trying to control the people on the surface by mm-hmm. controlling the clones underground.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that part didn't work.
Right. And so they just kind of abandoned
them all down there.
Yeah. And so they all started going insane. But Lupita Nyong'o's shadow is special because she created this based on this interaction that they had. She got her shirt that was Hold Hands Across America.
Right.
And it created this kind of like cult. And so they all start dressing in red. They all put this leather glove on. They have these gold scissors. And there's this weird like uprising that ever since she was a kid and had this, you know, meeting with her double, she started planning this thing of like, I'm going to replace my, like, I'm going to own this world, like take back the world
right.
from
it's
the
like,
people.
It's
going to
be our
above.
Turn and we're just going to kill all the above.
And that wasn't, that was a Goonies reference. They say in Goonies, they say, It's our world. How do they put it? This is our time down here.
Oh, yeah.
So she says that it's our time up there. And I was just like,
oh, that's true.
How are you going to drop this?
That one.
anyway, but yeah.
Well, she was already ticked at her husband for dropping whatever it was.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Home Alone.
Yeah.
It's like you did not just
like,
reference Home Alone.
We're not going to start
dropping
micro machines.
And then the kid's like, what's Micro Machines? The other one's like, what's Home Alone? That hurt. I was like, really, kid? Really? No, but the scope that it reached for after that, because like once they realize, oh, our friends got killed. Hey, maybe we should turn on the TV. Oh, holy crap, everybody's getting killed.
Right.
Like it just escalated so fast. You're like, oh, this is way deeper than what I thought it was.
So at first, I was just like, okay, so there are these kind of like, and so Jason Blum has been producing a lot of these movies. He did Get Out. He did The Visit. And there's these kind of just like jump scary things that happen in those movies and in other far lesser of those of his movies. And so that was what I was kind of talking about. And like the beginning part wasn't as frightening. But the way that he subtly starts introducing this idea that like, what if everyone in America had someone that was exactly like them?
Yeah.
Who could hunt them down
and kill them
and like it started reminding me of like The Birds.
Yeah.
The Birds is not let's watch all these birds kill a bunch of people.
No,
it's just this subtle idea of like off screen people are being killed by birds, and when you travel around there's just
birds
that are
oh,
hanging
yeah,
out
because they do that
staring at you.
Let me tell you, that was another thing. So, like, I was explaining how this movie has me hyped right now. Like, I am only just now coming down from this, and it was, like, an hour and a half ago. And it's this very quick, it's this slow amping up of your adrenaline so that by the time you realize what all is going on, it just makes you afraid to want to go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which, they only, like, so there's only been a few other times that horror movies have done this to me. Another example that I did not tell John about yet was, for some reason, I was watching Birds very early in the morning.
Mm.
And it was before I had to go out for work or school or something. And so, you know, I'm watching Birds and I'm like, okay, fine, let me go. And I go outside. And of course, you know, there's birds everywhere because that's just how it is. And I'm like, I should not have watched that movie because now I'm just going to be paranoid all the way to work.
But I think that's a good thing. So we're going to be talking about a book coming up, Native Son. It'll be April 8th.
Okay.
Around there is when the HBO movie comes out. We're going to try to time our podcast around that. But I was thinking, I was trying to think of an example of another literary fiction thing that somehow the writing kind of gets under your skin, right? And so I thought of Shirley Jackson's The Lottery.
Oh, yeah.
You read that, and it doesn't seem, after you read it, like this is the most terrifying thing in the world. But somehow everybody remembers that short story. And there's things about the writing that are very subtly creepy. Mm-hmm. And they're creepy because there's some of those things that are still a part of our society. But because it's this insane murder cult, there's like having that context makes it so that it gets in the back of your mind.
Right. Because it and could so, just be. It's that it doesn't take too much to go that many steps sideways and
so,
end up there.
Within this movie, here are all the examples I thought of those subtle references. So you have something like the Reds.
Right.
Which is like the communists. We call them communists, but the Reds. And that idea of the communist scare where your neighbor can be.
Could be
a Red. They when they're showing them holding hands, he says something like, it looks like some kind of protest.
Right.
And so like when you just see protesters, regardless of what you feel about nonviolent protest, you just get this sinking feeling of like there's something wrong with America. And so when you see these people on TV, it's just, it doesn't inspire hope in you.
No.
It's just like, okay, somebody's protesting about something again. And like, when's this problem going to be over? You know, that kind of thing. Then there's like, they say something about like seeing red. And I was thinking about like that being maybe standing for like blind hate.
Yeah.
Or something like. There's this idea of like, and so I think what they're playing with all these different ideas of what it means to be like soulless and, or like fake. There's one thing where the mom's friend, had plastic surgery. And so when you see her double, there's this very like ethereal scene where at first she's putting on makeup, but then she takes scissors and starts cutting at her scar.
Right.
And then, she's looking at the mirror, and at first she's crying, like really bawling.
But she's soundless because some of them can't make any sounds at all.
Mm.
So she's just voicelessly screaming.
Mm. And then all of a sudden she smiles.
Starts into smiling and then laughing.
So that to me evoked this idea of, because they're not, and that's one thing I respect about this movie, it's not, there's no monologuing really about America in any
or even
specific
what the problem
way.
Is in general that they're trying to address with it. There's no like, you know, trying to explain the metaphor in the film, in the text of the film itself. Like, there are some explanations of what's happening, but it's not explaining what this metaphor is. Like, they don't go off and say, you know, they don't make references to dark sides. They call them shadows, but that's about as far as they go with it.
Mm.
They don't make references to communism or commercialism or any of any isms at all. Like, they're not saying, oh, this is what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, I don't think they need to.
Mm-hmm. Right. But then there's specific, like that example, you can, that what that evokes within you is kind of what it means.
Yeah.
Right. So when I was looking at it, I was seeing somebody who was so hated herself so much.
Yeah.
That she's destroying her own face.
Which, and I liked that they made her voiceless because really, as they showed, like in her marriage and stuff, she had no voice in her life.
Hmm.
So I think that was a really good way to express this, you know, express it in a more terrifying way, what her situation was.
Right. And that's what I liked about it is that, and I feel like that's the, that when I bring up the term woke, there's that. And another thing I wrote down was the Underground Railroad. It's interesting because that, I think, evokes something that we've talked about a couple times, where it's this, the Jungian idea of the shadow. And if you think about a Black American, they might be more apt to understand that there's parts of America that America is trying to hide.
Yeah.
And so it's intriguing to me that, at one sense, this shadow person is this person's dark side. It's talking about this fakeness in America and everything like that. But in one sense, the main character is powerful because she recognizes that she's the only one who has previous experience
with this thing.
And so you can think of the Underground Railroad as something that was initially, you could think of as this terrifying thing, but it's a source, it's actually a metaphor that's powerful. Like, a lot of Black Americans see that as this uniting thing of them going underground and escaping, you know, this Black part of America's history. But then what that also leaves you, and this kind of masterful touch that Jordan Peele has, is that it reveals at the end of the movie, after the Lupita Nyong'o rescues her son from her shadow person, and after she finds out what the source of this is, it shows that she was kidnapped by her shadow person and chained up, and the shadow person put on her Thriller t-shirt that her dad won. Her dad won her in the carnival that they were going to, and so it's kind of ambiguous where you're like, oh, okay, who we know, who we've been following, is the shadow person,
right?
But has she got a soul now? Has she claimed her authentic self? And her son's looking at her, and she smiles very slightly, and it reminds me, and I think it's supposed to remind the viewer, of the Thriller video where, you know, you think it's really Michael Jackson, but he's doing that smile at the end of the video.
Yeah.
It's that kind of ambiguous ending that I think leads you asking yourself, you know, what is that meaning for you? What is that meaning for this character? And it makes it more visceral, I think.
Yeah.
That you're not sure.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie. And they've built up also the relationship with her son to, maybe her son has, because he has some kind of darkness within himself, and he can't really, he's isolated from other kids and things like that, that he might be able to see, oh, there's something not right with mom.
Yeah.
And
I think he figured that out. Well, okay. He watches, he's there, or it seemed like he saw her kill the other one.
Oh, right.
And yeah. And how she broke down doing it. Like, it wasn't, when she finally gets to kill, okay, first of all, the whole scene, the dance scene, that is gonna haunt me for years. part of the girl's background is when the parents get her back after her traumatizing incident and the switch. We realize now it's just switch, and she's the shadow child. She doesn't speak because she didn't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're assuming, oh, something horrifying happened to her. We need to get her into therapy and figure out how to make her talk again. Mm-hmm. And they get her dancing lessons is the thing that eventually, I guess, brings her out of her self.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this whole big scene of, because when she dances, the puppet version of the other version of her dances also, because mm-hmm. that's how this tethering thing works.
Mm-hmm.
The other person goes through the motions.
It's like what would have been an equal fight.
Right.
In terms of strength,
right.
Becomes she knows every time I'm going to move, and every time she lunges for her,
she just like literally matrixes out of the way. And it becomes this like horrifying dance scene between the two of them trying to hurt each other.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, she manages to get her, trick herself into, so that she can stab the shadow, or not, I guess, I don't know, I'm getting confused now as to which one is which.
Right.
But the one that you've been watching the whole movie kills the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But as she does it, you can start to see her revert to the shadow self. She starts to laugh that way and make those sounds as opposed to speaking. And you can see it come out of her. And I'm assuming the son saw that and realizes what happened.
And she there's a part where she's trying to prove to him.
Right, that it's like, her.
Yeah.
And he's just not buying it. But I think that he comes to accept it when they're escaping.
Right.
Because of, I think he had a closer connection to his shadow than the rest of them.
Yeah, there's actually a part too, like, she accepts at the beginning, like, the shadow person tells her to chain herself to the table. And so she really, at that point, has no control over anything. So she says, when it comes to the point for her son to deal with his shadow
person. They start pairing off their shadows.
Yeah, she says, go, I think she says, like, go show him one of your nightmares.
One of your magic tricks.
Oh, magic tricks.
That's what she tells him. Because he's been trying to get one of his magic tricks to work for the whole first part of the movie. And, yeah, but the way she says it, you know, it's basically go burn this kid to death. Like, because this needs to end. And the kid's like, fine, not fine with it, but he's like, yeah, okay, I know what you mean. I got this. As opposed to the other two where, I mean, the father does some because the father's job is to kind of go beat up stuff. But the girl just runs, right? Like, it's not, she doesn't tell her to go fight or go say, you know, it's more just get away. But the kid, the boy, she knows will do something, which I thought was an interesting part.
Yeah, I feel like it was a good way to show this kind of mother-son relationship that was kind of unique. And I feel like it was Jordan Peele's way of showing this interesting thing where, like, you were with a mother raising a son, there's this interesting idea of, like, you have to learn how to be tough in some kind of way. And what it was kind of playing with throughout the movie is that there's this difference between being tough and losing who you are.
Yeah.
And it's a big metaphor throughout horror is that you don't have to become a monster in order to fight,
the monsters.
But
I really loved, that whole fighting the shadow dark side of yourself metaphor that got put out. I loved the whole descent part where she's going down to the place where the puppet people were. Like, it's a very long descent. And they don't shorten it for
you. It's very, like now that you've seen The Shining.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's very reminiscent of
I was thinking Kubrick's. there's a Lovecraft story I've read where it's that, like, you let somebody find some random door in some old university and they just go down.
Far as the tracking of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's one of the main things that's creepy to me about The Shining is the empty hallways. Because you're always anticipating something coming around the corner.
This one was empty hallways full of bunnies. Which, you wouldn't think bunnies would be scary, but they were scary.
Oh, yeah. And then we need to find out what the choral...
oh, my word.
Haunting. The
music. So, like, it's very rare, I think. Like you were saying, you're used to music stingers. This movie was not all... I mean, there were some, obviously.
No, but there's a big difference between a good score...
Right.
And stingers.
And stingers.
And this I'm used to stingers. Being this what makes it scary.
This was dissonant music on purpose to unnerve you. I think that was another large part of what unnerved me so much was the music. Like, then this made me think of there's a Orson Welles movie called The Third Man. And there's some very, very strange instruments that they chose to do the score for that movie on because they wanted you to be off kilter the whole time.
Right.
So this was a very similar thing. There's this very strange, I mean, I felt it sounded like haunted Japanese children singing choral music. Thing going on, and I'm like, I have no idea what this is, but it's terrifying me, and I don't know what to do about it. Because it's the opening credits, right? Like, the opening credits,
yeah, they introduce
bunny rabbits in cages,
yeah, and they introduce this song, and it's this small shot of a rabbit that starts going, it's tracking back very slowly, and they do this whole like sequence, this whole, I don't know what you call it in opera, but this whole like kind of song, like
introduction sequence.
Yeah, and it's showing all this wall full of rabbits in cages, and it reminded me of The Omen a lot because in The Omen there's a lot of that because it's supposed to be the Antichrist. They use all of this, you know,
religious like choral,
religious choral singing to make it creepy. So it's very much an homage to that in my mind. And like
yeah,
the so fact that it was, it was also very, it was the title sequence. So they, not title sequence, credits,
right.
Opening credits. So they had the red letters against this very neutral color. So that was also kind of Omen-esque, where in those movies they would have a lot more like title, the credit sequences like that are very slow and have some kind of music behind it. So that it was an interesting, I think it was very modern in some of the aspects of it.
Right.
And in terms of like, there's a lot more of those horror fantasy type things now, but in terms of the suspense, it was
very old school.
It was much
very
more
Hitchcock,
like masterfully
Twilight
done Zony. To get you to like,
freaking, yeah, like So anyway, I need to look up what that music is and make sure I never, ever get
any. Here again. So yeah, I would highly recommend it. I feel like for
earlier in the day, middle of the yeah, day, go, it needs to be daylight.
Go to a matinee showing.
Yeah.
But like like you were saying, I think this is going to be really iconic.
Yes.
It's very much primed from the success of Get Out for people to recognize this as a next level. Like, so I think Get Out won Best Screenplay last year. But I think that in terms of the, and it's kind of, horror is very hit or miss. Rarely does it get any recognition. The fact that he did for Get Out might give us a little bit more hope. But Lupita Nyong'o nails the character,
so well.
And does the shadow people is the most expressive on purpose, obviously,
yes.
But does really good in that. And as far as the iconic horror concept being like nailed, this is really well done.
This is it.
Yeah. So highly recommend for horror fans and people that want a horror movie that you can interpret.
Yes.
And is definitely more horror fantasy than it is like, you know, trashy torture porn stuff. And what I was thinking was that with the Get Out being so successful, I thought like there's this version of it where he goes more experimental and gory just for the sake of it, because he's like, everybody's going to go see this because Get Out was amazing. But he really does a good job of elevating the genre again without, you know, taking it like this is a good faith, you know, example of like, oh, you want more of this?
Yes,
then
we
I'll
do.
Give you another
Keep
real
coming.
Good one.
Keep it coming. Good stuff.
Yes. So yeah, go see this movie, preferably between 12 and 3.
Yes. And then don't go to the beach for a really long time.
Look forward to the Twilight Zone episode coming. And then Native Son, try to read some of that and be able to be part of that conversation. We're going to be trying to put that on our YouTube and making the Fifth of the Month book club a thing that we do. You can hit us up on Twitter or Facebook at Unboxing Story or email us at unboxingstorypodcast@gmail.com. Support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/unboxing-story or just go to anchor.fm and look up
Unboxing Story.
There's a support button and we appreciate your stuff, your donations and whatnot. Can help us to go meet you guys at conventions.
Yeah, which would rock.
And we'll also try to have a video up about the Great Early High Valley Writing Conference went to.
Which was great.
Yeah, we had lots of fun and we got lots of good books. So we're going to talk about our haul. Thanks for listening and go watch a scary movie, preferably a good one like this.
Like this. Bye.
Bye-bye.